that conservatives and liberals, conservatives and progressives can speak to each other sanely about the same issues and come out to the same outcome, even if we speak about these issues differently. I know for some people it bothers them that there's not a lot of dignity and sort of happiness from Justice Gorsuch's opinion. I think at the end of the day, for a lot of poor trans folks, poor gay folks, many of folks who are people of color too, who are just struggling, trying to make ends meet, that want jobs, they don't really care what the opinion says. They care that they have rights. And this is how they got it. And I think maybe it's just dark 2020 times right now, but that in itself, that's a gift, however we get it.
We've been speaking with civil rights attorney Ezra Young. You can follow his work at EzraYoung.com. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin, Ezra Young.
Thank you so much.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. If you missed part of today's show or you'd like to hear previous shows, you can find shows and transcripts on our website, fair.org. The show's engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thank you for listening to Counterspin.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. I'm Jamie Partridge. My co-host, Amanda Hill, was unable to make it this evening. Our guest tonight is David Porter, a longtime member of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union here in Portland, Oregon, a member of the African American Longshore Coalition, and a former executive board member of ILWU Local 8. Good evening, David.
Good evening, and thank you for having me today. It's an honor.
All right. Great to have you. We are in the midst of the largest uprising against racism in this country has seen for about a half a century, really, maybe since the Civil War. Just for the three straight weeks, the streets of hundreds of cities in all 50 states have been filled with thousands of people protesting the murder of George Floyd, an unarmed black man, by the Minneapolis police on May 25th. And a week ago, on Wednesday, the day of George Floyd's funeral, the entire membership of the ILWU stopped work for nine minutes, the length of time the police officer held his knee on George Floyd's neck. And on this Friday, June 19th, the ILWU on the West Coast and some longshore locals on the East Coast will go on strike to protest police brutality and systemic racism. But before we go to talk about the work stoppage, David, tell us how this uprising is impacting you as a black man in America.
Well, to begin with, I'm pretty outspoken, so I'm not afraid to say what I feel. But I think this has lit a fuse in me. I feel like I have a need to continue to voice my concerns and reach out to other individuals who aren't being acknowledged or heard. You know, over the last few weeks, I've experienced so many emotions, a wide range, you know, related to George Floyd's murder and the protests afterwards. You know, there's times I've been numb, you know, that feeling, here we go again, this is happening. I've been angry. It seems like black lives are of little or no value to others. We still being looked at in some cases as second-class citizens. I've been sad because it seems like nothing has changed throughout this whole time. We're still battling the same old things. I definitely have been proud. I have two 19-year-old daughters that have been participating in neighborhood protests and marches, and they're finding their voices. Also, there's been some confusion associated with the aftermath of the protest, the looting, the rioting. Why are we burning down neighborhoods that affect people who support the community that they live inside? So those are just some of the feelings that I've had inside of me.
Thank you. What are your coworkers saying about it? How are they responding to the uprising and the whole the last few weeks?
Well, there's some of them that feel the same way I do. You know, there's some anger associated with it. But also there's a percentage of people that don't really want to talk about the root issue. They want to talk about the protests and looting, what they see on TV. Generally, people don't want to have that hard conversation about the existence of racism. That will require us to, you know, to shift and have an internal focus and really look at our part in it and see what our own personal biases are.
Mm-hmm. So both things happening among your coworkers. So the LWU, your union, has called for a one-day work stoppage from Bellingham to San Diego in all 29 ports, which will cost the capitalist class millions of dollars. This is by far the most powerful action yet, in my opinion, humble opinion, during this uprising by a group of workers, by a union against police brutality. Other unions have issued statements, or they've called for the expulsion of the police union from the AFL-CIO, but work stoppage. Why the ILWU?
My question is, why not the ILWU? You know, our motto, we say an injury to one is an injury to all. We are all working class people. It just seems like we're better united, and we have a passion and a strong voice, so why not exercise that? We have a long history of going against the grain, you know, of going against capitalism, fascism, stuff like that. You know, in the 30s, the ILWU boycotted ships that were loading material for the fascist and racist regimes in China. We did the same thing in Chile in the 70s. And, you know, we boycotted ships that were coming over here from South Africa or being loaded to go in South Africa to voice our strong disposition to anti-apartheid.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you know, probably the latest one was in 2008 on May Day. We shut down all West Coast ports because we were protesting the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and we wanted our fine young men and women to be home.
Amazing. And this is just way out in front of the rest of the labor movement. Where is that coming from? Can you tell us something about the history of the ILWU? Where does that tradition come from?
Well, you know, Harry Bridges was our founder. He was an Australian, and he was labeled a communist by our government, and they tried to deport him three different times. And he was just so progressive that he felt that if it came down to two people on the waterfront, that it would always be one white, one black. That, you know, that's how strongly and he felt about that. And, you know, we just got to fight for the little man. It's about increasing the standard of living in the for everyone, not just us.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about here in Portland. I know that there was from the founding of the IOWU in 1937, that there was a strong message, especially coming from Harry Bridges and the folks in the San Francisco, Oakland Bay Area, to fight racism and not be a segregated union like so many of the labor movement was at the time. But it still was difficult for black people to break into the union here in Portland. Can you tell us a little bit about that history?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they were willing to donate for causes that pertain to the South, but not in their own backyard. You know, they didn't want to integrate, especially in the Northwest. As far as blacks being on the waterfront, it first came on the waterfront in the 1964, I believe. There were 50 African Americans, along with they were part of a larger group of 300. And it came about by a court mandate from a judge called Gus Solomon, and it was known as the Solomon Act after that. In the 60s, there was a United Coalition of Black and Minority Longshoremen that was organized, and that was to address the discrimination at Local 8. And then later that became part of like the AA, African American Longshore Coalition.
And that's a coastwide coalition, right? The African American Longshore Coalition.
That is correct. And they were recognized in 1992 for their contributions to help remedy racism, sexism, and all forms of discrimination within the ILWU. And their goal was to find it a resolve internally. They wanted to work within the parameters of our contract and things like that. And not only did they help people of color, they helped anybody who reached out who needed help. It wasn't just exclusively for blacks or minorities.
So what are some of the issues or campaigns that the African American Longshore Coalition have taken up in Portland that you've been involved with?
It was definitely getting more minorities on the waterfront, more women and more minorities on the waterfront. There's been a push just because it's not a reflection, one, of the communities, and two, it's a family wage job. And there you go with the economic discrimination or economic racism. So helping to try to eliminate that.
And Joe, what's your story? How did you get on? And what have you experienced? Or how have you resisted racism on the job?
I'm from Southern California originally. In the L.A. Long Beach, I was born in San Pedro, which has one of the busiest harbors in the United States. But unfortunately, I wasn't able to get on the waterfront with the ILWU down there, so I moved up here. And my wife's uncle, who happened to be a foreman at the time, mentioned that it would probably be hiring in the next few years. And this was back in 1998. So I went down to the unemployment office, and that's how I got my application. And I was fortunate and got picked from there out of a pool of 1,000 people. Ooh. I was selected. And, yeah, they took 150 of us and made us a casual workforce in 99. And so in 2000, I got on the waterfront. And I've been involved, from there. We were asked to go to rallies, May Day rallies, anything associated with the labor movement, and we participated in. And there was a guy who thought I would be a very good representation of the ILWU, so he pushed for me to go to the leadership conferences and everything that was associated with the international. And I participated from that point on, and it's been in my blood.
And how long did you serve on the executive board?
I'm estimating roughly 10 to 15 years. I was vice president a few times for Local 8, and I was a caucus delegate about 7 times, which is the highest ranking body of the ILWU. It's members from every local that participate in this, and you're voted into office. And we meet in various different places and discuss issues that are relevant to us. And so to be voted in from Local 8 was definitely an honor.
So what kind of participation or membership is there in Local 8? Or you're in a different local now, but of black longshore workers now, is there a good percentage has been declining or increasing or
decreasing? It's a small percentage. I would say 5%. You probably have 10 longshoremen out of 400 or 500.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not good enough.
Yeah.
Well, maybe something will come out of this current uprising that will move that in a more positive direction. Where do you see the current uprising for Black Lives going, and what are your hopes both for your daughters and just for the movement in general?
I think we all would like to see some type of change. I think that's what society's screaming right now. I'm encouraged by new people, younger people getting involved. I would like to see more people involved. Traditionally, you know, in the labor movement, Jamie, there's probably 20% of the people or 15% of the people doing 80 or 85% of the work. I would like to see 80% of the people involved or 85% of the people involved united against this pandemic, because racism is basically a global pandemic. You know, it's going to take everyone to get involved, and we're going to have to look at our own selves and how we treat people, and not just point the finger at each other. I hope.
Go ahead.
That we can stay focused and stay on the issues and it not lose steam. You know, when there's rioting, looting, that distracts from the cause, and people don't want to focus on the hard issues. Those are easier, softer issues than really looking at, you know, discrimination, racism, sexism, homophobia, stuff like that. And those are the hard things that we're going to have to deal with in this century. I don't want to look back in 10 or 20 years and say the same old things are happening again.
So do you have any particular advice for our listeners, a lot of whom are union members, about how to get their unions involved in this current anti-racist movement? Do you have any thoughts about how people can talk with their coworkers or how they can get their unions involved?
Yeah, I think as individuals and as unions, we're going to have those, start those hard conversations. We're going to have to talk about our experiences, our hopes, our dreams. We can't stay silent anymore. We have to embrace what's uncomfortable. This country has a long history of it. And for some people, they have blinders on, like it never existed or it wasn't that bad.
Well, thank you very much, David Porter, who's a member of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union here in Portland, Oregon, member of the African American Longshore Coalition. Thank you so much for your time, and be well.
Thank you, brother. Always a pleasure talking to you and seeing you.
All right. Hope to see you soon. You are listening to KBOO,
Portland 90.7 FM, Labor Radio. In part two of tonight's Labor Radio show, we're going to hear an excerpt from a recent article in these times by Peter Cole. The most radical union in the U.S. is shutting down the ports on Juneteenth. Outrage over the police murder of George Floyd launched Black Lives Matter protests across the country and the world. Most actions are being organized by young black people, and while many are working class and at least some are anti-capitalist, few protests are formally part of the labor movement. That may change this Friday when the most radical union in the United States shuts down the country's gateway to the world, West Coast ports, in solidarity with Black Lives Matter on the day commemorating the end of slavery. As Clarence Thomas, a longtime dock worker activist for black equality and socialism, noted recently, it will be the first time that an international union has ever taken off work for the purpose of commemorating Juneteenth. Thomas, an African American from Oakland, is a proud third generation member of the International Longshore and Warehouse Union, the ILWU. Arguably, no union has fought longer and harder for black equality. As Willie Adams, the union's first black international president, recently declared, our union has a long history of confronting racism on the job, in our communities, and around the world. By contrast, most unions, hypothetically the collective voice of working people, seem hesitant to take action. While perhaps by mistake, the trashing of the AFL-CIO headquarters located near the White House exemplified the yawning divide separating young and youth protesters and organized labor. Yet consider that the AFL-CIO, however weak it may seem, still represents 12,500,000 workers. There is no larger movement of ordinary people than unions. Despite their power, their potential, unions are issuing nicely worded statements, but providing little tangible support to the current protests. The largest working class uprising in two generations. Some unions, such as the Chicago Teachers Union and the United Electrical Worker, Electrical Radio and Machine Workers of America, are actively challenging racism, police brutality, and other reactionary policies with progressive, forward-thinking actions. Such militancy and radicalism, not coincidentally, have emerged in unions with larger numbers of black and brown immigrant and female members. Still, the ILWU's Juneteenth action raises the bar for what worker solidarity with Black Lives Matter looks like. The breadth and depth of this union's radical commitment to equality may shock those who stereotype unions as liberal or even conservative. Harry Bridges, the ILWU's first and longtime president, once declared in the 1940s, if things reached a point where only two men were left on the waterfront, if he had anything to say about it, one would be a black man. Himself an Australian immigrant and anti-capitalist, Bridges made this claim when his union was more than 90% white. Zach Patton, a white rank-and-file activist in ILWU Local 23, Tacoma, proudly recounted to this writer some of his union's history. We passed down stories about integrating the waterfront and our union in the 30s and 40s, opposition to Japanese internment, Harry's deportation trials and the fight for immigrant rights, support for Dr. King and the civil rights movement, support for Cesar Chavez and the Delano grape strike, refusing to handle South African cargo to protest apartheid, and resistance to the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. ILWU members also understand the role of police in undermining social movements. Patton made this connection by highlighting the big strike of 1934, out of which his union was born. It's not lost to us that the formative moment in our history, Bloody Thursday, was a police murder of two strikers right outside the San Francisco Union Hall on July 5th, 1934, he said. That's why Jack Heyman, a veteran Local 10 activist and white anti-racist, recently told The Nation, if you look at ILWU's local bylaws, many of them explicitly ban police for membership. That's because the police have always been used as tools in the fight against working people. Local 10, the only black majority longshore branch, and its companion Local 34, have led the way in condemning racist police brutality. In 2010, the union shut down the Port of Oakland after local law enforcement killed Oscar Grant. They did so again on May Day in 2015 to protest the police murder of Walter Scott, an unarmed black man in South Carolina. After George Floyd's murder, the country's leading social justice union once more played a major role. Last Tuesday, the ILWU downed tools for 9 minutes during Floyd's funeral. This Friday, Juneteenth, the ILWU will shut down all 29 ports it controls for an 8-hour day shift. The dock workers intend to use their labor power to send a message, as Local 10 President Trent Willis, an African-American, declared at an SEIU-led protest in Berkeley on June 13th. "We're sending a clear message to the powers that be, our government. We're sending a clear statement to those corporate bosses that we intend to use our labor, put our labor where our mouth is. We intend to take economic actions if our demands are not met." Willis was referring to the demand to end racist policing. When taking this political stand, dock workers appreciate that their strategic location at the hub of global transport gives them tremendous power. The Pacific Maritime Association, which represents shipping corporations, explained in a June 8th statement why that matters. Quote, "West Coast ports handle a majority of the maritime cargo that helps fuel the U.S. economy, brings vital goods and medical supplies to local communities, and supports millions of American jobs," unquote. Clarence Thomas put it succinctly, "Longshore workers probably understand capitalism better than anyone else. If the cargo doesn't come off the ship, that merchandise is not sold. Stopping work is not a symbol. It's an act that demonstrates the leverage of the working class." Willis, Thomas, Gabriel Prahn of Local 52, Seattle, Keith Shanklin, Local 34 president, and others organized this Juneteenth stop work prior to Trump's provocation to speak that day in Tulsa, of all places. An ILWU press release explains this day's significant past and present. Juneteenth commemorates the end of slavery in the United States. On this date in 1865, black slaves in Texas were told of their emancipation from slavery 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation became effective. Our nation has made progress, but the changes necessary to end systemic racism have come slowly or not at all, as the murder of Mr. Floyd on May 25, 2020 demonstrated. Shanklin, the first black president elected to head Local 34, summed up at the June 13th protest in Berkeley why the ILWU will conduct this Juneteenth stop work to stand up against systemic police oppression and systemic police brutality. "We need to understand one thing. We cannot survive in this world no more with police brutality. It's time for it to end." That wraps it up for Labor Radio. I'm your host, Jamie Partridge, this Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today here we're here with Trish Jordan and other folks with Red Lodge Transition Services. How you doing, Trish?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for being on here. And I know you have some other great folks also involved with Red Lodge. And but first, can you talk a little about what you do, and then we can kind of get into all the great work everybody's doing.
Yeah, Red Lodge is a nonprofit organization. We established we founded in 2006 and received our 501c3 in 2007.